Welcome to Timing and Delivery Are Everything, episode 62 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owegon. All too often, we neglect to give careful thought to the timing and delivery of important conversations we need to have. Sometimes we put them off when it would be more constructive to have them earlier. Other times, we have important conversations when we're emotionally escalated, when waiting until we are more calm and clear and able to be more in our wisdom would create a better result. In this episode, I will share with you some thoughts on choosing the best timing and delivery for those important conversations you need to have. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by that famous author, Anonymous. The right conversation at the wrong time is the wrong conversation. Let's talk first about timing. The more important a conversation is to us, the more daunting it can be. So we can tend to put that conversation off past the time that would have been best. Or, on the other side of the coin, when a topic is very important to us or we have high emotion about it, we may rush headlong into it without giving sufficient thought to what the best approach might be. Let's talk about the inclination to put off an important conversation. We often do that when we have information that we fear will upset the other person, causing them to feel anxiety, anger, or sadness. We say to ourselves, "I don't want to make them worry. Maybe the situation will get better and I won't have to tell them." Or, "I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. Maybe it's nothing." So, we say nothing. As often as not, that's really the excuse we're giving ourselves to avoid a conversation we fear will be difficult for us as much or more than them. What we often fail to consider is that information is power, and by giving another person information about something that's happening or about to happen that affects them in some way, empowers them to be able to respond rather than react. The earlier they have that information before they are impacted, the more able they will be to give thought to how they will respond. Therefore, the more likely it will be that their response will be a wise one. Knowing in advance, they might even be able to avert or mitigate any negative impact, or at the very least, be able to psychologically prepare themselves for what's about to happen. Not giving them advance warning, or not even telling them at all, means that when the impact happens, they will very likely go into reaction mode and not be in their highest wisdom to face the situation. They may also be more negatively impacted than they would have been if they had some advance notice. Let me give you a couple of examples of what I mean. When I was caring for my mother during the last years of her life, she would often avoid telling me about some new symptom she was having because she didn't want to worry me and didn't want me to have to take time off work to take her to the doctor to get it checked out. More than once, this resulted in her having a medical crisis that ended up with her being hospitalized, which, as you can imagine, worried me a whole lot more than knowing about her symptoms before they reached a crisis state would have. And I had to take much more time off work to support her during her hospital stay than I would have taking her to the doctor to get her symptoms checked out. And, of course, she suffered much more by putting off getting medical attention before it became a critical situation. Another time, someone reached out to me for communication coaching on how to tell his wife that he had lost their son's college fund on a risky investment that he hadn't told her about. He was able to keep it from her for years because he managed their finances. He kept telling himself that he would find a way to replace the money before she found out, and could save her the upset of knowing about all the money that had been lost. The time was approaching when their son would be applying for college, and the cat was about to jump out of the bag whether he liked it or not. Of course, had she known years before when the money was first lost, she could have cut down on expenses and helped replace the lost funds with those savings. Putting off telling her made the situation and its impacts far worse than they would have been otherwise. Most of us don't like making another person upset, so we want to postpone doing that for as long as possible. Again, we may also want to postpone this kind of conversation because of how hard it will be on us to have it, almost as much as our desire not to make another person upset. I've known people who no longer loved their partner and no longer wanted to be with them, but didn't want to cause them emotional pain by telling them. In some cases, they just continued on with the relationship, pretending everything was okay. In other cases, they began an affair with someone else while living the pretense of devotion to their partner. Either way, they were disempowering their partner from being able to move on to find someone who did love them, while at the same time condemning themselves to a life of duality, deceit, and betrayal. Having the conversation, though difficult and upsetting, would have given them both the chance to move freely into a better situation. In each of the scenarios I just described, a much better outcome would have occurred if the information had been shared sooner rather than later. These are just some of the many dysfunctional reasons we put off having important conversations. Stay tuned and I'll offer you some thoughts on alternative approaches. You may be thinking to yourself, so does this mean we should never put off an important conversation? Well, never and always are dangerous adverbs because there is no single best approach to every situation when it comes to interpersonal dynamics. No hard and fast rules apply. Here's an example of when it might be a good idea to postpone a conversation, at least for a while. If you have high emotion about a topic you need to talk about, such as anger, frustration, or sadness, you may not be able to discuss it with as much wisdom when your emotions are at their peak as you would when you are more calm. Depending on the context and the other people involved, you may want to take the time to de-escalate yourself first and give careful thought to how you want to approach the conversation before you initiate it. That said, be careful not to use this as an excuse to put it off too long. I'm a person who feels emotion very strongly. I have learned in my lifetime that if I react to a situation while my emotions are at their height, I am very rarely going to be in my wisest self. I can be intimidating and even frightening to others when I'm very angry, and I overreact when I'm very hurt. So far, that's not been good for my relationships with others. So I've learned to pause, step back, and de-escalate emotionally before I discuss the situation and my emotional response. That doesn't mean that I stuff my emotions. I've learned the hard way that isn't healthy. Nor does it mean that I feel I have to wait until I no longer feel the emotions. That may not ever happen. It simply means that I give myself a chance to calm down a bit and be able to observe my emotions and determine what I want to address and how. I've also found that when I've calmed down somewhat, I'm then able to talk about my high emotion from a calmer, more observational perspective rather than speaking from those high emotions, which can take the form of yelling, crying, accusing, blaming, or all of the above. In each of those scenarios I described, well-thought-out timing and delivery of the important conversations that needed to happen could have had a significant positive impact. So far, I've spoken mostly about the cost of poor timing in our important conversations. Let's explore some possibilities for better timing and how we might best approach the delivery of the important information we need to share. This all relates in so many ways to episode 2 of this podcast, in which I describe the anatomy of conscious communication. If you listen to that episode, you'll get a deeper understanding of the concepts and tools I'll share with you here. The 4 primary components of conscious communication, as I see it, are defining the goal for the outcome of the communication, how we deliver information, how we listen, and how we negotiate. The first component, defining the goal for the outcome of the communication, pertains to both timing and delivery. The remaining 3 pertain to delivery. When defining the goal for the outcome of the communication, I encourage you to refrain from making that goal about something the other person will or will not do, or will and will not feel. You can't control that, and if you make that your goal, you may find yourself either trying to control the other person's feelings or behavior, or, at the very least, being disappointed or even upset when they don't feel or act the way you want them to. In my mind, the only feeling to include in your goal is that the other person will feel safe hearing what you want them to hear. Think about the bigger picture. What is the overall outcome that you want to try to create? For example, in the situation I described with my mother, part of my goal for the outcome of our conversation was that my mother would understand how important it is for both of us that I know about her symptoms and needs as soon as possible so that I can respond as well as possible and be a strong support for her and her well-being. I knew that she would hear me best if I was mindful to do what I could to help her feel safe in doing so. Another part of my goal was that she and I would both feel less stress and anxiety when facing challenges together, and that we could have fluent and collaborative discussion about these situations and how best to approach them. What timing would best support accomplishing those goals? Well, in our situation, I knew that I wanted to have the conversation about this with her as soon as possible, but also at a time when we were both calm and clear in our thinking. So I decided to talk with her about my concerns the next Sunday afternoon because we both slept in on Sunday morning so we'd be well rested and Sundays were our day to relax together, which we both looked forward to. The odds were highest that we would both be calm and clear on a Sunday afternoon. Yes, I did have the thought that I didn't want to ruin our Sunday. Rather than use that as an excuse to put off the conversation, I instead made it part of my goal to not ruin our time together, because the goal for the outcome of a conversation is what informs our decisions about how we approach our delivery. Waiting until Sunday also allowed me some time to de-escalate my feelings of frustration so that when we had the conversation, I could calmly describe those feelings to her rather than vent them on her. That certainly would help me to accomplish the goal of helping her feel safe in hearing me. Once I had defined my goals for the conversation, I was ready to embark on the second component of conscious communication, how we deliver information. When planning how you will deliver information, keep your goal for the outcome in the forefront of your thinking and let that guide you as you consider where is the best place to have this conversation. What words or phrases will you choose to best express yourself? In what order will you make your points? What tone of voice will you use? What pace of delivery is best for communicating with the other person? What information do you want to know from them? And how will you phrase the questions you'll ask to get that information? As much as possible, phrase those questions as open-ended questions, which require more than a yes or no as the answer. You'll gain greater understanding of their perspective of the situation that way, and you'll need that if you want to truly resolve the issue. That leads us to the third component, how we listen. Listen to learn and to understand. To help you do this, really focus on what they're saying and how they're saying it. Reflect back to them what you're hearing and understanding. Verify the accuracy of that and ask more questions to gain even deeper understanding. Sometimes we're tempted to listen to get ammunition to help them understand how wrong they are. If part of your goal is for them to know how wrong they are, I strongly encourage you to reframe that to helping them understand what will work better than the choices they've made in the past. You can do that by simply saying, "Here's what I propose be different in the future," or "In the future, I invite you to." Then follow that with, "Would you be willing to do that, please?" Pointing out to a person how wrong they are only creates the dynamic of blame and shame, which works against a positive communication and a positive outcome. This will take you to the fourth component, how we negotiate. Remember that in this context, negotiation is not a competition to see who will win and who will lose. In the context of interpersonal relationships and conflict resolution, negotiation is best approached as a collaboration to co-create a win-win outcome that will meet the needs of all involved. This is best accomplished with offers, requests, and counterproposals if requests are declined. Use what you've learned when you were deeply listening to them to help you know what you might offer to help meet their needs. They're more likely to be willing to do as you request if you accompany your requests with offers that will meet their needs. Let's tie all this together by going back to the example I gave earlier about my situation with my mother and the conversation I had with her. I told you about the goals I set for the outcome of the conversation, that my mother would feel safe hearing what I needed her to hear, that she would understand how important it is for both of us that I know about her symptoms and needs as soon as possible, so that I can respond as well as possible and be a strong support for her and her well-being. That she and I would both feel less stress and anxiety when facing challenges together, and that we could have fluent and collaborative discussion about those situations and how best to approach them. As I mentioned earlier, I chose a Sunday afternoon to talk with her. I started the conversation by telling her that I'd been thinking about her last stay in the hospital. In a calm, inquiring tone of voice, I asked if she would share with me what that was like for her. She described how difficult it was to sleep, how frightened she was, and how much she wished she could be at home in her own bed. She talked about how worried she was about me, with all the time I was taking off work, and how little sleep I must have been getting when I was with her in the hospital so much of the time. I reflected that back to her by saying, "Yeah, I wondered if that was going on for you. It sounds like that whole experience was really hard on you." She acknowledged that it was. She also said that she knew it was hard on me. That was a great opportunity for me to lead into the points I wanted to make and the requests I had for her. In an upbeat and collaborative tone of voice, I told her I had some ideas on things we might do to help to a large degree to prevent that from happening again. She was certainly intrigued by that. Being careful not to sound accusatory, I told her I had a feeling that she'd been getting signs that something was wrong with her health for some time before the day she went into crisis and had to go to the hospital. She admitted that was true. Still being careful not to sound accusatory, I asked her what kept her from telling me. Notice that I didn't say, "Why didn't you tell me?" I avoided using the word "why" because that can cause a person to feel accused and think they have to justify or defend themselves. She told me that she didn't tell me about her symptoms because she didn't want to worry me and didn't want to make me have to take time off work to take her to the doctor to get it checked out. I told her I appreciated her thoughtfulness and concern for me. Then I gently pointed out in an observational tone of voice that I would have been less worried and would have had to take less time off work if I had known what was going on with her before it became a crisis that resulted in her having to go to the hospital. Notice how I phrased that as an I message. I didn't say, "If you had told me." I said, "If I had known." I told her that I knew that she thought she was doing what was in my best interest, and I appreciated that. I told her that I recognized that she was trying to make it easier for me to care for her, and then reminded her that I had some ideas about how she could do that, and at the same time reduce the chances that she would have to go to the hospital again, if she'd like to hear them. Of course, she wanted to hear them. I said, "If you'd be willing, please, to tell me about each symptom when it happens, and when a symptom gets worse or you're feeling unwell, we can collaborate on what the best approach would be. We could call the doctor and ask her if she thinks it's necessary to bring you in so she can check you out, or what we should do about how you're feeling." I told her that I would worry less about her if we were being proactive rather than reactive. She said she'd be willing to do that if I promised not to get upset when she told me. It disturbed me a lot that she would say that, and honestly, I felt a bit defensive. I knew, though, that if I reacted defensively, we could both end up getting upset. So again, being mindful to keep my tone of voice calm and inquiring, I told her that I was happy to make that promise to her and that I didn't recall ever getting upset when she told me things about her health. I asked her what I had done that made her think I was upset with her. She thought about it for a few minutes, then admitted that her fear of upsetting me was not based on my actions. It was based on her fear of being abandoned if she became too much of a burden. I assured her that I would be by her side for the rest of her journey on the planet, and that my sister and brother would always be there to support us both. I told her that taking care of her was the least I could do after all the years she took care of me as a child. That made her smile, and I could tell it eased her mind greatly to hear that. To make sure that we had an agreement that we both understood in the same way, I asked her if we had an agreement that she would keep me closely apprised of her symptoms and how she was feeling, and that I would not get upset when she discussed her health. She said, "That's right, I agree to that." I wholeheartedly thanked her, We both kept our part of the bargain, and our relationship was stronger, and our remaining years together were easier because of it. And so, my friends, I encourage you to be mindful when considering the best timing and delivery for the important conversations you need to have. Give careful thought to when's the best time for both you and the other person. Think about the four components of conscious communication. Consider going back to some of the episodes of this podcast where I talk about iMessages, needs-based negotiation, and other aspects of conscious communication. Remembering that timing and delivery are everything will help you to have the best conversations with the best outcomes for all concerned. If you're enjoying co-creating peace, there are so many ways to help this podcast stay strong and live long. Choose one, choose several, and know that I am deeply grateful for your support in any form. Subscribe to Co-Creating Peace on your favorite podcast provider. Subscriptions improve podcast rankings. Share Co-Creating Peace with people in your life. Share the show on your platforms, tell your friends about it, and give Co-Creating Peace a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Your sponsorship will go toward the production expenses of this podcast. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. Contribute to the content of this podcast by sending me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. You can get a free 30-minute communication coaching session simply by coming on the show to talk about a communication challenge you're having. We can change the names of all involved, including you, to protect everyone's privacy. Trust me, any challenge you're having, others out there in the audience are also having. So you'll be helping them by working through your communication challenge with me. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please send those to me too. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I love hearing from my listeners, and I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through Patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.